Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisop. Today we're in the Grey Lodge.
Yet again. Once again.
We are approaching the edge of the event horizon for the Abyss. We're going to start... Today we start the initiation. We're going to separate the sheeple from... I don't know, what's the opposite of sheeple? I don't know. Sorry. I was trying to be put on my dramatic radio host voice there. Season 2, Episode 10 of Twin Peaks. To the normies, this is where the show starts to get in trouble. Stick with me. Stick with us. I would like to frame this as the start of Season 2.5. All right, 2.5. The Laura Palmer mystery is apparently solved, but definitely not forgotten, definitely not irrelevant. And this is the part of season two where I think we're really getting into the heart of things. I think this is where we're going to learn about the mystical backstory, and it's going to pop up sporadically over the next 12 episodes. 12? Wait. So 10. Yeah, 12 episodes. And I need you to stick with me. You're going to have your doubts. And I know this because I've been through this. I just went through this journey last year. I know. I wanted to shut this thing off. I wanted to get off the ride at this point. Things were getting silly. I thought, this show jumped the shark. Why do people like this? This is stupid. In a way, these are the episodes that are really laying out what's really happening, but you got to pay attention. And lucky for you, I am your guide. I will guide you through in the Grey Lodge what's going on. You're not going to get this anywhere else, folks. You're not going to get it. I'm telling you this right now. Because you're going to watch these episodes. They're, what, 45 minutes each-ish? And you're going to get maybe 5 minutes out of the episode where they're going to drop megaton nuclear bombs on you. No pun intended. And if you don't pay attention, if you don't have a guide to tell you what the purpose is, you're going to be lost and you're going to think this is stupid and you're going to go back to Marvel superhero movies. I'm telling you, they're laying out a very heavy occult concept here. And in this episode, they start to reveal it. These next two episodes are high octane, Red Bull, red pill, liquefied red pill. And I should make an energy drink. Liquefied red pill. And then on each can, I'm going to put some cool, interesting Illuminati fact. Damn it. Who can help me make that happen? It's actually a great idea. I'm going to do that. I'm like, who's that dickhead that's always boxing people? Jake Paul. I'm like Jake Paul now. Going from YouTube to selling energy drinks. Logan Paul, excuse me. I know there's people out there, oh, no, it's Logan Paul. Yeah. It's fine. But I'm here to tell you this, that my personal journey through Twin Peaks taught me that this whole show is an experience, and it's going to filter out people who are not ready to be initiated into truly understanding what's going on in these circles of occult thinking. The show, it puts all these barriers to entry out there. And only those that make it through all the episodes, read the books, and study what's going on in the realm of the occult will be able to put all these pieces together. Because one thing, anytime they interview someone about Twin Peaks, what's Twin Peaks about? They have a difficult time answering that. And I still do. To be fair, I still do. That's why we're on this journey together. I am writing a book. I'm going to piece it together. I don't know how to put it into words yet. I just know there's a lot happening in this storyline. And you don't really get it all until you get through every single episode and the movie, and then you read the books. You're peeling back layers to this onion. And how many select few have actually gone through all of those steps? Okay? Well, then out of those people, how many of those understand these occult studies? There's not that many people out there. I'm sure they're out there. Don't get me wrong. Okay. And then in this point in what I'm calling season 2.5 here, we also start getting into some of the personal stories of the inhabitants of Twin Peaks. They start to spread out. It gets a little more soapy, gets a little more silly sometimes. And if you're a true lover of Twin Peaks like I am now, you want to soak all this up. It's all good. The first time I watched it, I thought it was dumb. And that could be you right now. And you're probably rolling your eyes like, I got Laura in the studio with me. She's rolling her eyes. Okay. All right. Did I set that up enough for you? Because these next two episodes are going to be big ones. You can't miss these next two. Because in the last episode, we apparently solved the murder of Laura Palmer. We're led to believe that this spirit named Bob that had taken over Leland's body and possessed him to kill her, his own daughter, is now out roaming the woods as an owl. You know, Sarah Palmer lost her daughter, Laura, and then, I don't know, days or maybe a week or two later, she loses her husband, Leland. Now, she's got nothing, right? And that's where this episode picks up. It's 3 days later. We haven't skipped a single day in the world of Twin Peaks yet. This is the first time we get notification we're skipping some days. So we got 3 days later. Okay. Interesting that it's 3 days later in terms of, you know, Christ went to hell and came back up 3 days later for the resurrection. You know, is that affiliated here? I don't think so, but maybe. All right, let's get into the show, into the episode. We're at the Palmer house. Dr. Hayward, he's attempting to sedate Sarah with some unidentified drug so that she can get through the funeral of her husband. You know, this woman's been on drugs the whole show. She's a mess. And poor Sarah, she now has to bury her husband next to Laura. She makes comment about how Laura's gravesite barely has any grass growing yet, and here she is burying her husband now. Cooper's there, though, and he tells Sarah, hey, you know, Leland was innocent in this. He was taken advantage of a very long time ago, implying that Bob molested and took, inhabited Leland's body, possessed him. Sarah realizes that Bob has now taken everything that she loves, Laura and Leland, okay? We hear that Leland drugged Sarah to keep her in the dark of what he was doing. You actually get more of this in Fire Walk with Me. Sarah is, she's missing an earring, right? And she says, Leland always found the other earring, you know? Heartbreaking. Reminiscent of the broken heart necklace that Laura was, you know, messed around with in season one, all of her friends trading it off. But this is so real, right? This is a marriage. That's a real marriage there. Things like that. When the other one passes, you know, it's heartbreaking to me. I guess that's how it goes, man. You're there for your partner. And little things like helping find the earring, which maybe you get into fights about. I don't know. But that's the kind of stuff that you take with you, these memories. But take note that she says Leland always found the other earring. And when she says that, the scene ends, but it cuts to the fan. The infamous fan, the iconic fan. And it's very ominous. What is this telling us? Is this telling us that the energy of Bob is still nearby? It's still in the house. More to come. I don't know. I'm not sure. I just noticed that it happened. Because the fan is indicative of Bob, in a way. And you find out more about that in Fire Walk with Me. We're not there yet, though, folks. You don't get to enjoy Fire Walk with Me until you get through season two. They don't show the funeral, but then they show the wake. It's at the Palmer house. Everyone's there. Hank, Big Ed, Nadine, Norma, Pete. Donna, Audrey, Mrs. Hayward, Dr. Jacoby, Major Briggs, Harry Truman, they're all there. And we hear Cooper is getting ready to take some vacation time. Briggs offers to take him on some night fishing. That should be uneventful, right? Wrong. We're in Twin Peaks, folks. And the wake is, we also see the mayor, Dwayne Milford, and his brother, Doug Milford. I believe this is where they introduce Doug, a.k.a. Dougie, which if you've already seen season 3, you know Dougie is another character. Don't worry about that if you haven't. They're bickering, and we hear about how Doug owned the local newspaper, the Twin Peaks Gazette, and how he's now marrying, he's on his fifth marriage, and he's marrying a teenager, and he's old. He's, I don't know, 60. Not that that's old, but you know what I mean. Too old to be marrying a teenager, arguably. But hey, you know what? If she's a legal consenting adult, I'm game for it. No shade there. But Doug is an instrumental part of the story. He actually had laid down some of the early research into UFOs in the area of Twin Peaks. But you're going to learn more about that in the secret dossier of, or no, the secret history of Twin Peaks. Is it that or is it the dossier? I don't remember. It's in one of the books. But we're not there yet. You don't get that yet. You got to get through. You got to pay the dues. This is like any secret society. You don't just get to walk in and get the secrets. You got to be initiated into it. Okay. Now, Cooper, he's wrapping up at Twin Peaks. He's done. The Laura Palmer case is over. He's getting ready to leave. He's going to take some vacation time. He's going to do a little night fishing first with Briggs. And there's a knock on his door at the Great Northern there. And here comes Audrey. She's going to shoot one more shot. And Cooper's going to tell her a story about why he's so resistant to relationships. And they share a moment together, okay? I'm going to play you the clip. Take a listen.
Billman?
Customer relations. Has everything been satisfactory during your stay with us, Mr. Cooper?
Audrey, I have no complaints.
When are you leaving?
Going fishing.
But you are leaving.
Yes, in effect, I am.
So this is it? You save my life, then break my heart?
Audrey, I've explained to you my personal policy about involving...
Yeah, I know. I'm a teenager.
And you were involved in a case I was working on.
Someone must have hurt you once really badly.
No, someone was hurt by me. And I'll never let that happen again.
What happened? Did she die or something?
Matter of fact, she did. You want to know how? She was a material witness to a federal crime. We were supposed to protect her. 24 hours a day. My partner and I. Wyndham Marone was his name. He taught me everything I know about being a special agent. And when the attempt on her life was finally made, I wasn't ready. Because I loved her. She died in my arms. I was badly injured. And my partner lost his mind. You need to hear any more? Audrey, I like you and I care about you. I'll always consider you my friend.
Friendship is the foundation of any lasting relationship.
It's nice to be quoted accurately.
Well, let me tell you something, Agent Cooper. One of these days, before you know it, I'm gonna be grown up and on my own. You better watch out.
Okay, Andre, it's a deal.
You know, there's only one problem with you. You're perfect.
So Cooper, he is resistant to being into another relationship because the last woman he loved, who was a witness to a crime, he and Wyndham Earl were supposed to protect her. He failed, got shot, his girl got shot, Wyndham lost his mind. And, you know, Audrey wraps up their relationship telling him, there's only one thing wrong with you, Cooper, you're perfect. And take notice how when she says that to Cooper, he pauses and he reflects on that. He's clearly in deep thought about that idea of him being perfect. And she walks away. And you wonder what he's thinking. Is he thinking, maybe I shouldn't let Audrey walk away? You know, we all want that. We don't get that, though. But he's thinking about it. And if you listen, you're going to hear a distorted form of that Red Room music playing. Something is beckoning him. Take a listen to that. Rewind it and listen to that clip. At the very end there, you'll hear the Red Room music calling for him. So Bobby Briggs, he's over at the Johnson home and he's gassing up Shelley on the idea that he's going to land this lucrative job with Ben Horn. You remember? Because he's got the cassette. He's got that blackmail of Ben talking to Leo about burning down the sawmill and murdering, who was he on thing murdering? Talking about murdering. Anyway, he's got a blackmail tape about Ben Horn and he's gonna show up in the office. He already sent it to Ben and now he's going to show up and say, okay, put me on the payroll. He's wearing Leo's old suit. A little comedy. They're propping the mirror up on Leo's lap. He's still in the wheelchair. And Shelley, she's getting frustrated now. She wants out of the house. She wants to go on a date. Bobby's gaslighting her, though. He's got to go get this money. He's about to get the bag. In the words of Bobby Briggs, this is the big time. Woo! Bobby's so goofy. All right, then we're back at the sheriff's department, all right? And Catherine Martell's back. She's back. And she's telling Sheriff Truman, I'm going to play this clip for you because you got to hear the full thing. She's going to talk to Sheriff Truman about what happened after the sawmill burned down, about how she escaped into the woods, which could be true or could not be true, right? Because we know she was Mr. Tajimura, but maybe this part that she's telling happened before she came back as Mr. Tajimura. But she talks about this guardian angel that saved her that night, a mysterious voice that called to her and guided her into the woods, right? We know the woods are something special, past a rock formation of all things. But take a listen and we're going to unpack it afterwards.
Hello, Harry.
Forgive my saying so, Catherine, but aren't you dead? Does Pete know?
My husband and I will be duly reunited.
Well, all things considered, welcome home.
Any questions?
Yeah, a couple.
Am I under suspicion?
Well, I guess that depends on the answers I get. Maybe you'd like to call your lawyer.
No, that won't be necessary. I have nothing to hide.
Good, good. Well, for starters, where the hell you been the past 2 weeks?
Harry, do you believe in guardian angels?
Guardian angels? Catherine, to tell you the truth, I'm not so sure what I believe these days.
I believe an angel saved my life. I was home the night of the fire. A man called, a voice I didn't recognize. He asked me to meet him at the drying shed. There was a vague threat implied, so I went and I took my gun. And that girl, what's her name?
Shelley Johnson.
Johnson. She was there. She was tied up inside. And I think a bomb went off. I have just nothing but impressions after that. Just walls of flame screaming. And I have no idea of how I escaped. But I found myself in the woods. I was afraid. I was afraid for the first time in my life. I dragged myself through the night. And as the sky lightened, things began to look familiar. The woods, the path, a rock formation. And I was flooded with memories of my childhood. What heaven is. And that's when I saw our old summer cabin in the woods. Heaven was Pearl Lakes. I'd walked miles through the night. Only a guardian angel could have brought me there. Thank you. Thank God we always kept a well-stocked pantry. I went in and I opened a can of tuna fish. And I waited for whoever it was that was trying to kill me to finish the job. A loaded gun by my side. I was terrified that every moment was going to be my last.
What made you come back?
I ran out of tuna fish.
It seems we have another death and rebirth situation here, another sort of initiation of a Twin Peaks character. Like we talked about at the end of season one, and this time it's Catherine. She said she was saved by a guardian angel. I've got to take notes here. She said she was afraid for the first time in her life, meaning she was really confronting death, and she was flooded with memories of her childhood. She found her cabin in Pearl Lakes, which we're going to come back to that in a second. But she talks about this guardian angel saving her. And Aleister Crowley spoke about the importance of one's holy guardian angel as well. He believed that we each have a holy guardian angel that exists, and it's a higher version of ourself. And we experience it as an externalized agent. And in one of his magical orders, the Silver Star, the Argentum Astrum, the most important goal for the magician is to connect with their holy guardian angel. And the reason that is important because it is the process of their great work. It's their purpose of being. It gives them their true will. And that's where the Crowley statement, "Do what thou wilt," comes from. It comes from the idea that a person must find their reason for being in this world, and they must pursue it at all costs. The true will is sort of the end result of a person's great work, a sort of destiny they've been put on earth to fulfill. And we heard Cooper in season 2, episode 9 at the Roadhouse, that was last episode, refer to the idea of using magic to determine who the killer was. And that's when they found out that Leland was possessed by Bob. So is it possible Cooper is now on his path towards the true will? Catherine, she talked about how she found heaven at Pearl Lakes. And this is where her cabin was that saved her life. And she said she was led there by her holy guardian angel. She calls it a guardian angel. And recall how Pearl Lakes was part of the storyline where Leland was a boy who got abused and possessed by Bob. Remember, he said that. And recall that in the Secret History of Twin Peaks book, we heard about how in 1947, the year of Roswell, and the year that after Jack Parsons opened up all the portals, Maggie Coulson, a.k.a. the Log Lady, as a child in elementary school, she was camping there and she went missing. They found her the next day. She thought she'd only been gone a few minutes. and they found her with a mark of these three triangles on her body. Appears she had been abducted at Pearl Lakes. What's going on there? So Dick and Andy, we're still at the sheriff's department. Dick and Andy, they're still competing for Lucy's affection. Andy's always taking the high road. He's all heart, as Cooper would say in the next scene. Which makes me think of the, of course we know Lynch is obsessed with Wizard of Oz. It makes me think of the lion from Wizard of Oz. And Dick seems like he's always up to no good. So we're rooting for Andy. None of us like Dick, all right? Nobody likes Dick. Some people like Dick, but not everybody. And Hawk even pulls Andy aside. And he's like, you're crazy. You're letting Dick flirt with your girl? Like, he's got that sort of, I don't know what you call that. Not toxic masculinity, is it? Maybe it is. But Andy, he's full of heart. The guy doesn't have a bad, evil bone in his body. All right, so here we go. Cooper gives his, we're still the sheriff's department. Cooper gives his final goodbyes to Sheriff Truman. He's headed out with Major Briggs to do the night fishing. And Truman gives him a gift. He gives him a green butt skunk tie. If you're not into fly fishing, a tie is a little thing you put on your end of your string to catch fish. As you could probably guess, I also don't fish. I'm a pathetic excuse for a man. I don't watch sports ball, and I don't fish, and I don't hunt. But I can tell you that in seventh grade, I had to take an elective class, and I heard that the fly fishing class was easy, so I took it, and I was thoroughly confused the entire time. So Truman gives him a green butt skunk tie and a Bookhouse Boy patch. He's formally now inducted into the secret society of the Bookhouse Boys. They give him a handshake, maybe even a secret handshake. Cooper, he formally says his final goodbyes. He toots his little whistle, toot, toot, his kazoo, and formally says goodbye to Hawk, Andy, and Lucy. It appears that he's about to leave Twin Peaks for good. But then wait. Special Agent Roger Hardy shows up, played by Clarence Williams III. He plays the character of Samson in Half-Baked, if you've seen that. He's from the FBI Internal Affairs, and he's here to suspend Special Agent Dale Cooper for crossing over the Canadian border unlawfully to save Audrey Horne. Hardy says that the motivation for this action was sus, and he's still waiting on the evidence to arrive. And, you know, we're not really sure what to think. They tell him that, look, there's all these dead bodies at One-Eyed Jack's. You were crossing the border without permission. The Canadian Royal Mounties were doing an operation, a drug trafficking operation, and you screwed that up. You're in big trouble. Back to the Great Northern. Audrey, she approaches Bobby Briggs, because remember, Bobby's there to get money out of Ben, and she approaches him in a rather seductive manner. And she helps him get into Ben's office, where he attempts to get paid based on this blackmail cassette tape. And he completely fails. Ben kicks him out of the office. And Bobby, he's so cocky. When he goes into the office, he puts his gum on the frame of this door, this beautiful door, like a total jackass. So Ben kicks him out. Audrey's consoling him. Like, she knew that wasn't going to work from the jump, I guess. And he offers to take her for ice cream and asks if she wants a cone or a bowl. And she tells him a cone because she likes to lick. What's going on here? Are we showing a transition of Audrey having a crush on Dale Cooper to Bobby Briggs? Johnny football star? Say it ain't so. Audrey, you're better than this. So, Special Agent Roger, what was his full name? Roger Hardy. Roger and the Mountie, they question Cooper about the operation, about how they crossed the border and ended up with all these dead bodies. They end up taking his gun and badge until he can defend himself. Truman escorts Cooper out, gives him the bookhouse boy's secret little salute, and then runs a little smoke screen for him, telling Roger that he's not answering any questions without the proper paperwork and, you know, warrant or whatever he needs. Meanwhile, Nadine, she's back in high school. She's a master tumbler. She's got these abnormal super strengths. And this is one of the scenes where when you watch it, you start to wonder, is Twin Peaks losing it? Are they jumping the shark? She tosses a guy into the air. He goes 100 feet into the air. Very campy, very silly. Really starts to plant doubts. But I'm telling you, my friends, you need to stick with it. You need to stick with it. Back at the Double R, a bunch of stuff happens. Like, we find out M.T. Wentz, the food critic, was actually Norma's stepmother the whole time. And to make it worse, she left a bad review about the Double R Diner. What a bitch. And the scene reveals how... let's see here. The scene, it reveals the tension in their relationship, okay? And Norma's got a bunch of bad relationships. In fact, well, we're going to come back to that when Ernie and Hank show back up with the Double R. Poor Norma. You know, we want Big Ed to come save the day at this point. But, yeah, this whole thing with M.T. Wentz, it feels like that was 30 episodes ago with the food critic, but, hey, they wrap it up at least. Meanwhile, Ernie and Hank, remember, Vivian is married to Ernie now, and, is it Vivian is Norma's real mother? Man, there's so many characters in this show. Vivian, Twin Peaks. Sorry, folks. It's a work in progress here. Vivian Smythe. Oh, yeah. Vivian Smith. She is the pseudonym of M.T. Wentz, and she was also the stepmother of Norma. Okay. All right. So Ernie is her new husband. Remember that? And Ernie was in the prison with Hank. So Ernie and Hank, they're up at One-Eyed Jack's. Hank's cooking up a plan to steal all of Vivian's money with Ernie's help. Jean Renault walks in, and he is trying to arrange a relationship with Ernie for a bunch of illegal activities. We find out that the Canadian Royal Mounted Policeman, Preston King, who was working with Agent Hardy interrogating Cooper, is actually working with Renault. He's a dirty cop. A Mountie, I should say. They're trying to frame Cooper. Because remember, Renault has beef with Cooper because he thinks that Cooper is responsible for the death of his brother, Jacques. But Jacques bit the bullet, baby. He's gone. But it's because Leland killed him. Leland Bob suffocated him. But it doesn't matter. Jacques blames Cooper for arresting him. Meanwhile, Josie shows up at Truman's door. She looks all beat up and dirty. She's apparently back in Twin Peaks. More to come there. All right. Now, finally, the final scene, and this is where the payoff happens, all right? I'm going to play this full scene for you. Cooper and Briggs, they're out. They're doing their night fly fishing, camping, whatever. They're roasting marshmallows. Cooper brings up the topic of Bob. Major Briggs, you're going to hear him talk about powerful forces of evil. And listen to him talk about how what he says to Cooper about how men have a fate sometimes, a destiny to face great darkness. And he's going to lay down some good philosophy here, and he tells Cooper more or less that, you know, he's got certain gifts. And then he's going to ask him if he's heard about the White Lodge, and Cooper's like, I got to go take a leak. I'll be right back, and you can tell me all about this White Lodge. Take a listen.
Mm-hmm. time, I did what I thought was right. I must now face the consequences.
You can do no more.
Well, Major, I find myself thinking a lot about Bob. If he truly exists.
Now, I've pondered that same question continuously since this horror was revealed.
Try to imagine him out there, incarnate, looking for another victim to inhabit.
There are powerful forces of evil. It is some men's fate to face great darkness. We each choose how to react. If the choice is fear, then we become vulnerable to darkness. There are ways to resist. You, sir, were blessed with certain gifts. In this respect, you're not alone. Have you ever heard of the White Lodge?
The White Lodge? No, I don't believe I have. Major, I'm going to take a moment here. Feel the call of nature. There's nothing quite like urinating out in the open air. I look forward to hearing more about this White Lodge. When I return from my journey.
That's how the episode ends. Let's recap what happened there because it's incredibly important to the whole story. Briggs, the guy in the Air Force who's been working top secret projects out in the woods, looking at cosmic UFO paranormal activity, tells Cooper there's powerful forces of evil and some men have a fate to face this great darkness. He then implies it's Cooper. Because Cooper is blessed with gifts to resist having the fear of darkness. He has no fear. Thus, he is not vulnerable to facing the evil. And at this point is when Cooper walks away. Briggs says, have you heard of the White Lodge? And then he walks away. And then there's this, you see a force sort of scanning through the woods. And you hear the owl. Cooper looks up and he gets a blinding white light, pulling Cooper into this strange parallel reality of sorts with an ominous black hooded figure. And remember earlier we talked about the Holy Guardian Angel and how the silver star, let's see, where was it here? Let me look through my notes. Crowley talked about how the Holy Guardian Angel exists as a higher version of the self, experienced as an externalized agent. And the goal was to hook up with that Holy Guardian Angel to find one's path, one's destiny. And isn't that interesting that that's exactly what we see Cooper possibly having here? And I think Catherine, didn't she say that she saw a being of light? Her Holy Guardian Angel was a being of light. Just some ideas to present to throw out there, but he sees the white light, a sort of strange parallel reality thing happens, this ominous figure. Cooper goes back to the campsite. Briggs is gone, given heavy X-Files right now. And this is another critical piece of the puzzle because Cooper is special. He is an anomaly. And he is going to be used in a universal battle of good and evil. Of dark and light, I should say, according to the Theosophist. And recall earlier, we wondered about how Cooper could be on the path for his true will. A destiny that he has to fulfill. Major Briggs says some men have a fate. I think he's implying that that man is Cooper. Do you remember? I got to be careful here. Yeah. I think we already saw how Briggs showed up at Cooper's room with that printout of data they pull from the skies, and it said, Cooper, Cooper, Cooper. You remember that? Briggs knows. Briggs knows that Cooper is the chosen one. He has the gifts to confront evil forces. And we already saw Cooper, he was inducted into the forces of light when he received his Bookhouse Boys patch in the episode, because the Bookhouse Boys is a secret society set up to combat the dark forces of the woods for years and years. And all this matters because, in the angle of theosophy, they don't believe in a good and evil. They believe in a duality of light and dark. One thing isn't necessarily bad, quote unquote. That's a social construct. And Briggs uses the same language of light and dark in this conversation. In theosophy, there's a concept of mankind evolving through any means possible. Like, that is the whole purpose of this experiment here. That means using light or using dark, the ends justify the means. Neither one is evil. How do we keep mankind evolving? And Helena Blavatsky described these opposing forces back in Atlantis, where they were working to evolve mankind back then. And those two forces were called the Lords of the Dark Face, using black magic, as opposed to the Lords of the Dazzling Face, which used white magic. So it's possible. I mean, according to my, your humble conspiracy theorist here, that's the vibe Twin Peaks is putting out. I think that's what we're walking into here, folks. And by the time this whole thing is done, season 1, 2, movie, and season 3, you're going to agree with me, I think. Maybe. Or maybe, I'm certainly no expert on Twin Peaks. There's a lot of people who have way further expertise than I do. So I could be missing some pieces. But like I said, this is a work in progress, and you're behind the scenes with me in the Grey Lodge as I write the book. The definitive book about Twin Peaks. Let's put a nail in the coffin. David Lynch said there's no point in trying to figure out what it's about. I'm telling you, I'm going to find out what it's about, and we're gonna reveal it. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. Your homework. You're going to watch Season 2, Episode 11, The Masked Ball. All right? This one is going to be a banger. We're going to have the full explanation. They're going to tell you in plain sight exactly what's going on. And when you hear it, you're going to say, that's what my boy Isaac was telling me about on the last episode. I can't believe it. Well, you're going to believe it. So watch that episode and come back, because we're going to knock that one out of the park. What did Bobby Briggs say to Shelley when he was gassing her up? What did he say to her? I'm looking through my notes. Well, the effect of this isn't working. This is the big time. Woo! So come back for next time. Thanks for your support. Stay woke.